B-Pod Studios.
Elgar. I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man, Mel. Nobody's perfect.
Elgar and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And the right-hander deals. Swung on. Driven to deep right. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a grand slam. Let the Gardy party begin. Greg Gardner plants one in the right field seats. It is a grand salami. And the Yankees, down 3-1, now take a 5-3 lead.
Sorry about that. Red Sox deserve it.
I love that doofus.
Red Sox deserve that doofus right down their throats. They really do. Play like that. You throw a pitch like that. You got to be kidding me.
Unbelievable.
0-2. Grooves it. Right down the middle.
I mean, really, like belt high in the middle of the plate. It might as well have been playing in Williamsport. Because you know you get it in the air to right. As soon as you hit it, you're like, oh, God.
The Globe. So it's gotten so bad with the Red Sox. Even the Globe is taking him on. Alex Speer. You know,
this was a rip job.
Alex Speer, John Henry's illegitimate bastard child. I say with all the love and respect in my heart, his boy, his whoopee, his guy. It says, is this too big of a hole? Is this too big of a hole for them to climb out of? Dan Shaughnessy, who you expect. Headline on Shaughnessy's column. Now is not the time to mince words. The Red Sox stink. They had more balls, they would say suck. Shaughnessy says it makes no sense to me. How can a healthy team with the fattest payroll in baseball, a championship team that won 119 games last year and brought virtually every player back, a team that plays in the tomato can age of MLB tanking, how can this team not be one of the 10 big league teams to make it to the 2019 postseason tournament? How is that possible? He says, I know we're all tired. We're all sick and tired of hearing, you know, Alex Cora saying we're going to be fine. We're tired of the stubborn, smarter than everybody else Red Sox refusing to admit they failed to prepare properly in Fort Myers. All that is painfully obvious now. But how in the name of Izzy Alcantara can these Red Sox be this bad? They have yet to win a series. They went 2-6 on the West Coast. They went 3-3 at Fenway against tanking teams like Toronto and Baltimore. They were outscored 16-1 in back-to-back games versus the Orioles and Yankees Monday and Tuesday. They got swept by a Yankees team with 12 players on the injured list. 12.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday's box score features six batters living at or below the Mendoza line. This is Murray's point. Mookie Betts is down to 200. Jackie Bradley is at 148. Steve Pierce at 125. Dustin Pedroia, 100. And Sandy Leon has no grade point average. 0.0, Dean Wormer. So John Henry's newspaper is even taking him on. Murray, is it over?
Yeah, it's over. It's over before Easter. I am declaring the Red Sox season over. I am. There's too big of a hill to climb. It's not going to turn around. It doesn't feel like it's really going to turn around all that much for the pitching. You hear, again, go through that lineup right now. Five players in that everyday lineup hitting 200 or less. The only guys that seem to bother to show up right now are J.D. Martinez and Xander Bogaerts. Everyone else sucks. You said it right yesterday, Maz. Everything that this team does right now sucks.
Yeah, they suck at everything.
They suck at everything.
And you know what? Even Dombrowski has said it now. I mean, read it by all means.
So in the Alex Speer rip job, Dombrowski's quoted as saying about, you know, where the issues are and, you know, what can you improve? He said, when you start looking at our club, you say, well, what facet of your club is playing really well? We're not really playing well anywhere, said Dombrowski.
We suck at everything.
Our starting pitching hasn't been very good. Our defense hasn't been very good. Our defense hasn't been overly good. Our hitting hasn't been like it's been capable of being. You've got to shake out of it. You just can't keep playing like this, and I don't think we will. Am I concerned? Yeah, I'll be concerned until we start playing better. So at least there's some realism there. At least he's not saying we're going to be fine.
No, you've got the president of baseball operations saying we suck at everything. That translation, we suck at everything. What is gray about that comment? I know, and I'm the negative a-hole. The president of the baseball operations said last night, we suck at everything.
What do you blame him for?
The one thing I really blamed Dombrowski for, and this is a tangential story last night, is Dustin Pedroia. you expected this guy to play 125 games or whatever the number was that you threw out? I think it was 125, right? Like, that's what you thought, really? This is 2 years in a row now where they went into the season betting on Dustin Pedroia and didn't go out and get a second baseman in the process. Last year, they had to get Kinsler in the middle of the year. And, you know, I'm not a huge Kinsler fan, but they instead of going to get a reliever, which many of us thought was more important, they had to get a second baseman. Now, with even more payroll restrictions, it feels like they have to do the same thing.
And can we add the Swihart thing on top of it? They needed a roster spot for Sandy Leon. And so they DFA Blake Swihart, and then, 48 hours later, Pedroia's probably done.
Correct. So there you go. There's that element to it, too, that you mishandled the roster, like all of it. They suck at everything right now, including roster management. They suck at everything. They can't get anything right. No matter what they do, they F it up.
It might be over. I'm not there, Murray. I'm close.
No, the old Felger would be there.
No, not necessarily. I can be close to an opinion and not have it. They're not quite. But boy, they're getting close. 8.5? 8.5.
And look at the landscape of the American League. It's not as down as it was last year. And look, some of these teams are going to come back down to earth. But the American League West, you could get the wild cards out of there. The Twins are pretty frisky in the Central. Like, the Red Sox keep this up, they're not going to make the playoffs. I'm declaring it dead. Dead by Easter. It's over.
And Mike, just quickly. Okay, so last night you're up 3-1 going into the seventh on the road. The guy who came into the game is Brandon Workman. If you had another reliever or a closer, then maybe that's Brazier. Now, Brazier gave up a home run, but I don't think he's walking the bases loaded, basically.
He's serving a meatball up 0-2.
Okay, so Workman gave up a hit in there, but he gave up a hit on the first pitch of the inning, which, oh my God, what a shock. A Red Sox reliever came in the game and threw a curveball on the first pitch. Not like you see that every day. They do it every time. Like, you know it's coming. The first thing they do, first pitch reliever, watch it. Curveball every effing time. They do it over and over again. So Clint Frazier lines a single. Then you know what happened? Walk, five pitches. Then a strikeout. Then you know what happened? Walk, five pitches. Bases loaded, one out, and now Workman's out of the game because you don't have enough good relievers. So Brandon Workman's getting the seventh inning at Yankee Stadium. And then here comes the meatball from Frazier after 0-2. Marinara all over it, hanging, dripping over the plate.
Here's why Jim in Brighton has a suggestion. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, how you doing, guys? I was just wondering, what do you guys think about going after Keuchel or talking to Kimbrel again, seeing if he wants to come back?
Mass?
So I don't want Kimbrel. I don't. I'm done with Kimbrel. And he's better than what they've got, okay? But Keuchel, you could talk me into. I like Dallas Keuchel. I think he's a good pitcher. And he's a solid major league pitcher is what he is. They won't do it. I think I'd be shocked if they did it.
And this goes back, let me tell you, I meant to mention this during your Pedroia thing. The reason Pedroia is here is because of the money.
Correct.
Meaning the reason they'll go out and sign a different second baseman is because they don't want to go over the tax.
Right. They're at almost $240 million, and I think the number this year is $246.
So Pedroia's on the books whether he plays or not. So we'll give it a shot. Maybe he comes through and the money is spent on someone who's actually going to play. But if it's not, it's going to be Nooney anyway or Holt or whatever, and they're already on the books and we're not going over. It's a money thing.
I mean, that's what I think it is. I think that's a big factor.
Same with Keuchel and all this stuff.
Yes.
Keuchel would be not. I mean, Eovaldi was better last night, but if you move one of those starters to the bullpen, that spreads it out a little bit.
Now, in their defense, should this team need a pickup on April 18th?
Of course not.
Okay, really, at some point, the players, you got to get your heads out of your asses. Because you are so far up there, you can see out your nostrils.
Chuck in Boston has a Bruins thought. Go ahead, Chuck.
Hey, guys, where has Jake DeBrusk been? I mean, maybe he's banged up, but if he gets, start to play in this game like last year, it should get Krejci going. Then also Felger. Come on, let's be positive here. We need some playoff hockey and depth the weekend for the Bees.
Okay, but believe me, I'm rooting for him, but it ain't my job to be positive just to make you feel better. The Bruins were in control of the series, I'd say it. If I felt they controlled play, I'd say it. I don't feel they've done it in this series. So let's see. I mean, it's still time. If they come back to Boston and sort of just stifle them a little bit, just slow the game down, make it more their game, I'll say it and I'll feel good about them. But that's not what happened last night. DeBrusk, he's right. I mean,
since the two-hander to the head.
Yeah, since the Kadri hit. You know, I thought DeBrusque was fine, but he's not playing fine.
No, no. In fact, I'd go so far as to say last night, up until the very end of the game now, because in the last 3 minutes, he was on the ice a fair amount, and I thought he was at least heavy on the puck, right? He was positioning himself. It was hard to take the puck away from him, and he was fighting for pucks a little bit. But prior to that, oh, he was awful. So, he was invisible.
So it's either a physical thing, he got dinged, which would make sense. You hope it's not another thing, which is, well, he had a target on his back. The folks up in Canada were losing their minds. He was the villain because he gave a knee on Kadri and was, you know, face washing him and was all over Kadri. And so he sort of goes into a hostile environment with a target on his back. And as a young kid, he sort of shrinks. I hope it's not that.
I mean, I wouldn't rule it out. Like, again, he's a kid, so you can't rule it out. But you look at, and Cassidy said something after the game last night where they were talking about Pasternak, and he says, you know, you don't want a goal scorer to get to the point where all of a sudden he's getting the NC out there, and we weren't quite there with Pasternak, you know, and I think we got him out of it. Now we got to get DeBrusque out of there. So he made a comment about he knows DeBrusque isn't playing great.
Wayne in Yarmouth on the Red Sox. Hi, Wayne.
Yeah, they are getting in deep, and I liked Maz's point yesterday about them extending to 108 losses. Now it's even worse. But, you know, if these guys don't wake up, they've got to now go over 600 the rest of the year, 6 out of every 10 to play off, and that'll only get them to 90 or 91 games, and that won't make the playoffs. So what makes you think that they can play that well even to get there?
Is that math right? If they play 600 ball, they're only at 90 wins?
So, I haven't done it. I'll try to do it during the break, but I look at it this way. You're now 7 under. Okay? 7 under. So to get to 5 games over, you got to go 20-8 in a month. 20-8.
So I think they're obviously capable of that.
Sure, but that's a good run.
Okay, but then that gets you there. Then what happens the next month? You know, just automatically, the law of averages, the way baseball works, you sort of slide the next month.
You would think so.
So then you're back under. Then you got to do it again the next month. I mean, that's sort of I said that from day one about, you know, a lot of baseball, they can start slow, soft opening, but what if it starts to spiral? I know guys squeeze the bat or they, you know, try and whip it a little bit more on the mound and they haven't quite built up and now they're pressing and now the manager's sort of panicking and now it starts to build and it gets worse and that's what's happening. It's
But Mike, you're missing the point. I mean, you know, all you got to do is get back on that 108 win pace and you're good. That's all, that piece of cake.
Is that 108 loss pace? Is that still on pace for 108 losses?
I think it's worse now.
No, it's more for sure. Yeah. Yesterday it was 108. Now it's got to be more.
In fact, if you can give me like 10 seconds, I'll give you the
math. I'm surprised Maz can't do it in his head because he's that kind of guy. He's that smart, Tufts kid.
I'm almost there.
Okay. 8.5 behind Toronto or Tampa.
Yeah, now you have one of your playoff heroes, one of your best pitchers, hoping it all goes to hell so he can get traded out of here.
They're now on pace for 111. 111. 51 and 111. Is that a record? I'm just wondering, like, how is that, like, in terms of the plus minus on that, going from 108 wins to 51 wins is a difference of 67 wins in one season, right? That's got to be some kind of record, right? That's like, what a U-turn that is. Fastest major league U-turn held by 2019 Boston Red Sox. Minus 67. 67 Red Sox. How's that impossible dream? Pretty good.
More of your thoughts right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man, Mel. Nobody's perfect.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And the right-hander deals.
Swung on. Driven to deep right. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a grand slam. Let the Gardy party begin. Greg Gardy.
Yankees, down 3-1, now take a 5-3 lead.
Sorry about that. Red Sox deserve it.
I love that doofus.
Red Sox deserve that doofus right down their throats. They really do. To play like that, you throw a pitch like that, you got to be kidding me.
Unbelievable.
0-2 grooves it right down the middle.
I mean, really, like belt high in the middle of the plate. It might as well have been playing in Williamsport.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong, sorry.
It's Felger and Maz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Two balls, two strikes, two outs. Top of the ninth, 5-3 Yanks. Chapman trying to seal it here. It'll be a 2-2 to Bradley. Struck him out swinging. Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win. Now the Yankees get off the deck down 3-0. Get a ribby double from Frazier. And in the seventh inning, get the grand slam from Gardner and win the ball game 5-3.
Let me continue with your Red Sox thoughts, your Celtics thoughts, your Bruins thoughts. How do you feel about each team after last night and their respective series so far? I don't know how you can feel I don't know how you can feel good about them. Maybe you think they're not done, but no one feels good. Mike in the car on the Sox. Go ahead, Mike.
So I have a question theory. My theory is I think it was a mistake that Alex Cora brought the team to a World Series win last year, because if you remember, all during the year, every little magic trick he tried worked. So I think psychologically now he's got this attitude where, don't worry about it, it'll be fine, don't worry about it, I got these things I'm going to be working out, they're just off to a slow start and all this stuff. What do you guys think?
I think he was so cocky. And it was the wrong approach for a team that's more than willing to lose its focus. And then simply that.
Yeah, to say that it was a mistake, I don't think it was a mistake. I think he had a good year, and they had a good year.
No, wait, it's not a mistake that he had so much success. It was a mistake to believe it just automatically happens.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm talking about the caller said it was a mistake that they won the World Series.
Well, that's silly.
Yeah, that I don't believe. I'm sorry. I was talking about what he said there. In terms of how they approached this year, a colossal mistake. I'll tell you what surprises me about Cora is that, okay, fine, he's cocky, he's confident. I get it. For a guy who has spent a lifetime in baseball, and I know he's only 42 or 43 or whatever he is, you'd think he would know that the game can be really humbling.
Yeah, certainly as a player, a gritty, gutty, smart, you know, sort of tweener player. He wasn't a star.
I mean, the idea that you would just approach it and say, no, we got this.
Well, he was the kind of guy who would have to show up and grind and work and be smart and tough and all. That's the kind of player he was. Then he wins a World Series as a manager, and he says, we didn't even need to turn the page. We just keep doing this.
I mean, absolutely.
It's right? Insane.
And then, you know, in a baseball family, his brother played it. He's played it from his kids, a baseball playing country. Like, my point is all of that. If any sport ever teaches you anything, it's that the game can kick your ass, regardless of the sport. The game can kick your ass. And they came in and acted like, no problem, we got all the answers. I mean, what a mistake.
Michael and Methuen on the Bees. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike, I just wanted to take a different angle on what you said earlier about how the Bruins would be in trouble if they kept, you know, Toronto kept up this pace. I'm not disagreeing with you, but it seems to me like when I watch these games, Tuukka Rask seems to, he worries me more when he only faces like 24, 25 shots as opposed to 40. I think the more rubber he gets in these games, the better off he is. And the other thing is, when Toronto plays at this pace that they're playing, they give up a lot more scoring chances. I think it kind of reflects what Maz said earlier about how the Bruins used to dictate the play on some of these old games, but they would lose 3-2. Nowadays, it seems like, well, if they get the chances to score, they got the guys that can put the puck in the net when the opportunity arises. So I think when it when the pace picks up a little bit, it actually benefits the Bruins.
Okay,
too.
So you want more games like last night, Mike?
No, not quite to that extent, but I do think that, like, when Toronto has a tendency to get offensive, because it's like...
Let me just stop you. I understand. When Toronto gets going, they're susceptible. I think Toronto's susceptible on their end because they're not a good defensive team. And, you know, when your skill guys make plays, they can expose them because, at the end of the day, they're not great back there in Toronto. But if you're saying that that's the kind of game you want... Or that actually benefits the Bruins? I am sorry. No. No, sir. Go look at the last 4 minutes after that TV timeout. That's the game that benefits the Bruins. They got possession in the Toronto zone. They were able to keep it down low. The game sort of slowed a little bit, and the Bruins had possession. That's how they want to play. And I think that's the best news from last night, that they actually did it. They actually, in that last 5 minutes, the previous, you know, 3 or 4 minutes were much worse than the last 4 or 5. They settled it down in the last 4 minutes. They need it closer to that style of play.
I mean, to me, the reason why there was more space last night is Cassidy kind of threw some wrinkles in there. I think that was a big factor in the game.
We're going to get to his night coming up, but yeah, no question.
I don't think it was the pace of the game that created that. I think that Toronto wasn't able to match up like it did in the first three.
Charlie and Braintree, your Bruins thought. Go ahead.
Yeah, so as I'm watching last night, I'm just envisioning Babcock on the bench telling his players, dump the puck into the Bruins zone, come change it up. And then his players are saying, well, what do we do after that? And he says, don't worry, they'll give it back to you. Because that's what they did all night. Brandon Carlo in the third period, he's behind the net after a dump in. He looks to his right over his shoulder. He looks to his left. He looks right at Morgan Riley crashing down the boards. And what does he do? He sends it right around the boards, right at Riley, and he puts a little oomph on it, thinking, hey, maybe I can get it, right past him.
I know the exact play you're talking about.
No, he looked at him right in the face, Mike. You saw what I saw,
yes,
right? And
totally.
He just right to him.
Totally. Totally. And it happened over and over again. Their exits out of their zone, not good enough. Their possession down low against Toronto, not good. They did some. I don't want to tell you it was a complete disaster, but it still wasn't good enough to the point where Toronto's going on these flurries against you, that some you survive, some you don't. And I'm just telling you, I don't think you can survive over the next three games if that's the way it's going to go. If that's the way it's going to go, I don't think you're going to make it this time. Toronto's a little bit better than they've been in the past. They're a little tougher, a little better defensively, and they've been through it now. So, and if you're waiting for that Toronto collapse, I don't know. So you've got to settle the game down.
I mean, if it turns into a contest of speed, the Bruins are toast. Toronto's too fast. And so, like, you can even see it. Carlo looks like the game's moving too fast for him at times. At times, I'll tell you what, in the first four games in the aggregate now, not just last night, I think McAvoy's looked like that at times. Like the series has moved too fast for him. He was better last night.
Offensively, he was great.
But you know, he's still up and down.
Here's Jake in Boston on the Sox. Hi, Jake.
Hey, boys, now that you think this is over, finally, are you guys going to blah, blah the $200 million spent on this team? Or is there going to be accountability starting with the manager and general manager? I know if I managed a $200 million budget and my work melted down like Chernobyl, I'd be fired. And yeah, you can't fire the players, but you could stop coddling them. There's nothing in that CBA that says you need to fly them on a private plane. You just need to provide a seat, a first-class seat. So make them deal with the TSA and the autograph speakers, and there's nothing that dictates that you need to provide a first-class meal, just that you need to provide
So hold on. They're still going to fly private and have first-class meals. Let's not get silly. But, you know, on the...
Feed them slop until they start winning.
Exactly, yeah.
I think the other day he wanted to fire Cora, too, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he did. Yeah. The list of blame, Dombrowski's down the list. I mean, his job is to acquire talent. It's the players and the field manager to show up to play every day.
I mean, this is a gross underachievement in terms of performance.
But I think Dombrowski was part and parcel with the organization that they can take this approach in spring training and be okay. This super casual, soft opening. I think he played like a... I didn't see him putting up a fight. As a general manager, if he wanted to say to the on-field staff, maybe we should have our pitchers throw a little bit in Fort Myers, he could affect that change. He's the one in charge.
Sure.
And he stood by and let it happen. So he's on the list somewhere.
I still put most of that on Cora. I mean, it's astonishing that they look as inept as they look. I mean, that's really bad. It is so embarrassing to come out and play the way that they have played after a 108-win season on top of it. And that is brutal.
Drew in Brookline, what do you got for us?
Hey, how you doing? First-time caller, big fan. I just want to say I am really disappointed right now with what's going on with the Red Sox. I mean, but who thinks that the Rays and the Tigers coming up and then the Rays again? We can't clean up these unproven teams. I mean, the Orioles and the Blue Jays, are we really scared of these teams?
No.
You know, I mean.
I know, but those teams, and I'm going to put New York's current state is like Baltimore and Toronto. The six guys of their lineup, as Maz said, are on the DL. Six. So you got three major leaguers in that lineup, which is what Toronto and Baltimore are. Maybe not even, but you know what I'm saying. And against those teams, you're now 3-5 in the last eight. So why should I be confident against the teams coming up if you haven't beat them yet?
You shouldn't be confident. No. Right now, they can't beat anybody. You get the Bad News Bears out there is what it is. This is, again, I'd call it embarrassing, but that word's been used ad nauseum. Like, they're puking on themselves.
And, Murray, you like the Rays. You think they're legit.
Yeah, I mean, they have some of the best pitching in baseball right now. And last year, you know, they didn't go away. They won 90 games. People forget about it. I thought they'd be a pain in the ass. They're not going away. I think the Rays are legit.
I think Murray's right. The pitching's good.
Okay, you caught a break this series, though. You're not going to face the best pitcher in the American League because he dropped a block of granite on his toe in the bathroom.
I don't believe that. What really happened?
Do you ever believe any of those stories?
No.
You know, like,
please,
it's always something else, isn't it?
You were hammered and you fell.
But how do you come up with that one? I dropped a block of granite on my toe. Was he redoing his bathroom?
What do you have an outhouse?
But what granite?
I mean, why are you carrying it?
Was he tiling? Was he doing the cabinets? Was he doing the countertop? What was he doing?
Hire someone.
Those guys have the money to hire somebody.
I mean, I dropped a bottle of A1 steak sauce on my big toe once. It was not pretty, man. Let me tell you. I'm serious.
Well, that's close.
I swear to God.
That's probably closer
to what happened to Snell than a block of granite.
Oh, my God. I had to go to the emergency room the next day.
Enough of story time. Coming up next, here's an update with Murray. And then, for the first time this Bruins series, I wanted someone to start stretching out. I wanted someone to start limbering up. I'll tell you what I'm talking about.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Playing a minute here in the second. 2-1 Bruins here in game four. Matthews brings it into the right circle. Fires. He scores. He wristed that one. It bounced off Rask. It trickled in the near post. And the Bruins and Maple Leafs are tied at two.
So, you know, Heinen tried to make the pass in the middle. Kapanen picks it off, and Chara's got to stay. This puck is going to go off the body of Rask and in that short side. Hard to tell whether it went in between his arm and his body. And it looks like that's where it went, in between the glove hand, arm, and the body, and trickled in that short side.
That's the first time this series. First time this series, I said, Bruce, walk down to the end of the bench and just tell Halak to be ready. Don't get him. Don't get him. You don't got to pull Rask after that one. But just give Halak a little look. Maybe you don't even want to walk down there because you don't want to mess with Rask. Like, I'm about to pull you. But do you have some sort of eye signal? Do you have some sort of look you can give the guy that says, as subtly as you can, start stretching a little bit. Start getting limber. Start getting ready. Find your mask and just be ready. That's the first time all series I said it.
I wanted to puke. I was ready to reach through my TV and give him a dope slap, for crying out loud. That one pissed me off. And all series, because the whole sort of, you know, again, it's 2-0 relatively late in the first. And I'm looking at the clock and I'm thinking, because they scored with, what, about 5 minutes left in the first period, if I remember right? Something like that, five or six?
Toronto to make it 2-1, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember thinking, just get through the rest of the period and keep it 2-0, and Toronto got one, and I thought, oh, I hated that. And that one wasn't, you know, that wasn't his fault. But I looked at it, and I went, oh, I hate giving up that goal. Now they go in intermission with a little bit of momentum. They come out with some. And so a minute in, you give up that goal, 1:07 into the period, I think it was. 1:07, it's 2-2, and the 2-0 lead's gone with two full periods to play. Oh, my God, I was losing my mind. I said, you got to be kidding me. They're going to lose this game now?
It's the first time this series I had it. I had that itch. But he settled down. He was good the rest of the way. He helped win you that game. I don't know if he stole it for you, quote unquote, but he was really good.
He was. He was good. The rest of the game, he was good.
And so there you go. Fine. Okay. He sees, 42 shots, and there's one leaker you want back. That's, I don't know if it's acceptable, but it's certainly not the worst thing I've ever seen. So Rask was more part of the story last night than he's been all series, and it was a good part of the story. So that's the fair and balanced opinion there on Rask. That goal can't happen. No, you can't have that goal. You made a great point in the email exchange about how that changes the whole night overall.
I mean, so again, 42 shots, he made 38 saves, which is a save percentage of .905. If he makes one more save, one more, the number goes to .929. Like,
that's a big difference.
Tell me that's not the difference between a game where you look at him and go, there you go, and one where you look at him and go,
Not quite.
Right. Just one save.
So I don't think it was as bad as not quite. I think it was a good night and a winning performance. So I'm fair. But that goal,
oh boy, can't happen.
And I just hate the style of it. The style of it, which is just the thing about Rask that drives me bananas, when he gets small.
Turtles.
You know, you're a positional goalie who's big and plays the butterfly style, and you're not that athletic, or you don't play athletically. That's not your style. So you're wholly dependent on staying big in the net and having a good angle. And he starts to cheat to the far post. He's turned a little bit to the shot, and he's small.
He does. He scrunches up.
Oh, God, you can't do it. The two things that drive me nuts are that, and then there's a lot of things where he's swimming, where he sort of dives forward with his chest, and he ends up swimming in the net. It's like, dude, you can't.
Sprawled.
You're not, yeah. You're not Dominic Hasek or Tim Thomas, where you're going to recover from that and make some sort of save. You've got to stay upright and square, and if you don't, you're porked. And so when he loses that, it's like that's when the trouble starts. And that rush, I said, uh-oh, get Halak ready. And he steadied, and there you go.
So, I mean, if I'm being honest, in real time now, when they scored the fourth goal, I wasn't happy either. Then I saw that it went in off of Achari's ass.
Yeah, it's definitely.
No, that wasn't his fault. I mean, it changed. But in real time, I thought it made its way through, and he lost it. And I went, oh, my God. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. If they blow this, I am going to be pissed.
Okay. So overall style, I didn't like. Chasing the game, I still feel they're playing Toronto style more than yours. I think that spells trouble unless you can change the tenor of the series, all those things. But there were good things. And I pointed out many times how you settled the game down in the last 4 minutes. I think that's the best. Maz pointed out the other thing. The skill that you showed offensively and the finish that you had, you got to give him credit for. That's not something every Bruins team has had. And some of those goals were beautiful. I mean, just start with McAvoy. His offensive game is just tremendous when he gets it going.
I mean, awesome. Fabulous shot, good setup. That was Coyle, right, who made that pass?
Yep.
And then, honestly, the pass was even prettier.
McAvoy's pass to Marchand was unbelievable.
I mean, what a great play. So, like, and you know, Cassidy touched on this after the game, too, and it's a good point. Like, because as that was going on, I'm thinking, well, there you go. Get the D involved a little bit, too. Like, let's see the D get involved in the offense. Take a chance or two and produce some offense for them. And then, but then you sort of catch yourself and say, well, you got to be careful with this team, though. Because if you commit and you make a mistake, well, now you're getting that stretch pass the other way, and you are boned.
I loved the Chara goal. I thought that was awesome, the way it was screened. He gets that, you just saw that lane and slapped it in. I mean, look, I'm a little bit biased because I love the old tree man, but I thought that was awesome.
I thought that was a good break. But either way, Bergeron made that play.
He did.
Bergeron made that play on the forecheck, and that was on Bergeron. How'd you feel about his game overall?
So, look, I thought better. Offensively, I still want to see a little bit more from him because I think he's capable of a little bit more. But for the night, and for a guy who had been on the ice for 5 Toronto goals in the series, plus 3.
And the faceoffs were better.
Tremendous. 73% on the dot. 73%. I mean, he kicked Tavares was invisible last night. Tavares was the guy you didn't see on the ice. I mean, for a guy, again, a superstar in the league, big contract, he was invisible.
Marchand?
I thought Marchand was the best player on the ice. I thought he was. I mean, Matthews was good too, but I thought Matthews' game isn't as gritty as Marchand's game. Marchand digs and fights. Matthews to
finishes.
Me,
he just finishes.
Yeah, Matthews to me is all about space. You give him the space, he's going to score. But Marchand will create the space. And again, I thought the best play he made all night was that feed to Pastrnak, winning the puck battle in the corner.
Which one?
The one where
he had two. I mean,
the one on the one timer
on the power play.
Yeah, the other feed was ridiculous too. Of course, that's the one that got blocked, and he got it back, and
that's
then
right.
fed it again.
That's right.
They were both tremendous, but the second one was Marchand's game in a nutshell. Just being a relentless pain in the ass, stealing the puck, making the pass, and then on top of it, you know, he was involved in a lot of physicality in the game, and nowhere did he do something stupid.
Did you see the one play, one time, it was after whistle, he was sort of holding his stick out, almost, and then like McCracken a little bit. And I don't know if he was, I don't know what exactly he was up to, but there was a little...
I don't remember.
There was a little something... altercation, too strong of a word. But then he sort of had his stick out like, I don't know, but it was totally in control. He didn't stick anybody. He didn't go after anybody. And he was brilliant offensively.
Oh, he was great. He was dynamite in that game. All right. I mean, again, I thought he was the best Bruin.
How much credit do we give Cassidy for all of this? We'll pick that up in our long commercial-free segment next.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, it's Mass. I know.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
Bergeron chipped it ahead, 2-on-1. Here's Marchand over the line, left side, looking for Pasternak. Deflected. They score! Marchand's original pass kicked right back to him. He stayed with it, sent it down low, and Pasternak redirects it home. Bruins 3, Leafs 2.
Just moving Pasta around. He wasn't on top of his game, and for whatever reason. Heinen has played, you know, with Bergie and Marsh when Pasta missed 4 or 5 weeks. Did a good job up there. Tailed off a little at the end. I'm not sure Dant can sustain it at this point in his career every night against the top lines, against the top D, but he certainly does a nice job in spots. Pasta and Krejci have played together, so it's just a different look. Johansson's back in. That gives us some balance in the third line, a threat to score with Charlie. But maybe a little more than... what we had. So just moving some pieces around. Hopefully it gives us a spark. Maybe it makes them think. You never know. It might affect how they do things. I don't think it did. They just, you know, they're going to play their game. But at the end of the day, we still got Pasta back with Bergie a little bit. We knew we'd do that. Certainly in the power play and a few 5-on-5 shifts. And it worked out today.
Okay, Matt, your thoughts on Cassidy's night. Then we get back to the phone.
So I love what Cassidy did. And again, we had talked about a potential change. And we sort of put it in very linear, clear terms. Put Pasternak on the second line, move Heinen up to the third line. You know, that was what you... He kind of did a little bit of everything. I mean, he just mixed it up and jumbled it so that Toronto couldn't singularly react, which I loved. I thought, what a smart way to do it. Like, no, we're not going to make it so simple for you that we're just going to put him with Krejci on the second line, and then you can adjust and defend that line how you want. We're going to move him around. We're going to double shift him.
When there's an offensive zone faceoff, we'll throw him back out there with Bergeron.
I mean, really, and again, so I heard the very beginning of the game in the radio because I was driving home last night, and in warm-ups, Pasternak, I'm going to get this wrong now, Pasternak was with Bergeron, and Johansson was with Krejci, right? And then the game started, and Heinen was with Bergeron.
You're saying Cassidy was playing games all the way up to the...
Totally.
To the
he totally was hiding it the whole time. He's just yanking people around. We might do this, we might do that.
He was talking for 2 straight days about keeping Pasternak with Bergeron.
Totally.
And they practiced that way. Well, they didn't practice in between games. But anyway, he had said the whole time, no, we're going to keep it.
Yeah, and then they didn't skate yesterday morning, right?
Right, right.
So all of it. So the only time you see it is pregame, and all of a sudden the lines are a little bit different, and maybe Babcock's looking at that going, oh, you know, maybe they're going to do this. And you just plant the seed. Even if Babcock doesn't fully take the cheese, it's now in the head.
Okay, did the line shifts work? Because, again, most of the night the Bruins were getting it taken to them.
Yes.
And I agree. I still think it worked, and here's why. And even though Pasternak, who got unglued and scored a couple, Pasternak scored from Marchand. It's not like Pasternak was set up by Krejci. It's not like Pasternak scored when he was with Krejci. He didn't. Pasternak scored on the power play once, And then the other time was when Bergeron got an offensive zone faceoff after an icing, and Pastrnak, and that's when Cassidy threw him back out with Bergeron's line on an offensive zone faceoff. And it turned into a rut, you know, that went back down the other way, and then they came back on a rush, and that's how they scored. So it's not like Pastrnak scored on Krejci's line. But it, as you said, it jumbled everything up to the point where for most of the night, Pastrnak was not skating against Jake Muzzin. Babcock kept Muzzin and that pair on Patrice Bergeron. So for most of the night, David Pastrnak was not getting the snot kicked out of him by Jake Muzzin. And that just, I think, you know, sort of loosened him up for when he was with Bergeron and Marchand. And it just loosened up the whole game. That he wasn't getting the snot kicked out of him by Muzzin.
I just think what Cassidy did was blur the matchups and blur the lines, so to speak. So that
he sure did. Coyle went up a couple times with Krejci, didn't he, on a couple of shifts? And he really sort of mixed and matched and threw it in the hopper, which, you know, finally, dude, finally. What took you so long?
Yeah, to me, I thought it was, and it was a good way to do it. That's the part that impressed me about it. It wasn't just so simple as to say, okay, Pastrnak goes with Krejci, Heinen goes with the first line, Johansson, you know, it was constantly moving. It was constantly shifting and evolving so that I almost felt like the Leafs had to look up and go, okay, who do we get out here now? Like, because I have to imagine they were dialed in a million times more than we were.
So I think Cassidy woke up a little bit. The one thing, again, that I was second-guessing in real time was after that fourth Toronto goal to make it 5-4 with six and change left.
Backes?
No.
Oh, all right. Backes was on the ice, and I'm like, ooh, I don't love that, but go ahead.
Well, no, it was the fourth line that got scored on. Was it Backes? I thought it was Nordstrom, Wagner, and was Backes out there?
No, I just meant I saw him on the ice late, and I didn't feel good about it.
Well, okay, so now we're talking about something else. I think Cassidy plays that third and fourth line too much. I think he plays the fourth line too much. The fourth line without Corrali has been useless, freaking useless, and those guys are getting 12 minutes a night. They should be at eight. They should be at eight. The third line, I mean, Backes, I get you, but Coyle's been good. So the third line deserves a real shift. The fourth line, those guys should not be getting 12-plus minutes. They should be getting eight. They've been freaking useless. Achari without Corrali is useless. I'm sorry. And Nordstrom, I feel, is just there, and Wagner's not been the same guy. That the fourth line has been totally neutered. So stop rolling it. Okay? Play them less. That's just a second guess. I was going to second guess him for the timeout after the Toronto goal makes it 5-4 and the building is, you know, the roof's come off the building. You're reeling. You're under siege and there's 6.5 minutes left. I'm like, timeout, timeout, stop the bleeding. And he let it go. And Toronto went on another little flurry right after that. I'm like, what are you doing? And then came the TV timeout, which comes, I think, the first whistle inside of 4 minutes left, either that or 6 minutes left. It's one of the, I think it's inside of 4 minutes. Is the last TV timeout. And like I said earlier, I'm hoping Cassidy had command of the situation and knew, well, why should I call the timeout with 6 minutes left when I get it with four? I'll just hope I can survive the next couple minutes, get the natural TV timeout, and then still have the real timeout in my back pocket. Hopefully he was in that firm of command. The flip side of that, or the bad news would be if he just sort of lost his way and didn't think to call the timeout, which I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I still thought, you know, if they had scored in those next 2 minutes and he let him score three straight goals without stopping the game, that would have been on him. That would have been on him. He rolled the dice a little bit on that. It worked because they came out of that TV timeout and really settled things down. But I thought he could have used a timeout in real time right there after that fourth goal.
So I meant to ask this too in the email exchange this morning. So I'm going to spring it on you with the understanding that, you know, you might have to think
spring
about
it. Go.
Okay. The whole idea that quote unquote Pastrnak was benched.
I don't buy it.
Me neither.
Yeah, I don't either.
Okay, so I'm glad you said that because I don't buy it for a second.
Oh, no, I said it in real time. They killed two penalties, and the line out after the PK is always sorted. Now, Pastrnak's usually on that shift after the PK, but I felt it was really sort of more about the game, with the way the game was rolling.
That's how I felt, and I felt like he wanted to see what Toronto was doing. So you know what? I'm going to try it this way. And the other thing is Pastrnak's first shift was a double shift. He was out there for a minute and a half. And then the next one was 55 seconds, I think. So the point is when he put him out there, he left him out there. Like, and he did it more than once. And then they had the penalties, and then he's not on the ice. But he was basically going out there every 3 minutes. And then they had the penalties. And I don't think it was a benching. I think people are getting that wrong. I think that he looked at it and said, you know what, I'm going to mix it up here a little and see how the Leafs react.
All right, so anyway, it feels like he got the coach back. You know, he's been such an aggressive regular season coach and a guy is not one that is always willing to mix it up and not afraid to sit guys, play guys, move guys, and just sort of he's an active coach, I feel like. In the first three games, it was like, where's Cassidy? Is he going to put his print on the game? And I think he did last night. And so there you go. Let's see. Hopefully that continues for because they're going to need him. Because Toronto's giving you a real series, and you're going to need your coach to coach well. They're going to need him in this series. So I promise, to your thoughts on everything. We've asked a simple question. How do you feel about the Bruins after last night and so far in this series? I still don't feel great. I think Toronto's taking it to them too much of the time. How do you feel about the Celtics after last night in the series so far? I don't feel great. That Indiana team stinks. And as Sean Grandy said, you stole two at home against a team that stinks. And then how do you feel about the Red Sox? Does that even need an answer? Those three things with your calls, I promise, are after Murray's 90-second update. No spots here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.